No consequence, no kind, no world, when we come into yours sometimes with uncertainty as to whether it is morning to you or afternoon. I know you may think that one strange, but it is sometimes rather difficult for us to know whether it is morning or afternoon. In any case, it is little consequence, and no care to hear.
Yes. Is it Brother John?
It is I, John, Brother John.
Yes.
Well, my children, at the moment, you might say that you seem to be at a standstill, but I can assure you that it's only temporary.
Right.
These things that we have endeavored to do require on your part great patience, as indeed on ours also. And it is important, in fact, probably the most important thing, to have an ideal condition under which to sit before we can really make the progress that we desire for you and for us. Circumstances have not been very helpful latterly. There have been little complications, but they are past. Now I think you can look ahead to this coming winter with great interest, because we are hoping to bring in contact with you a certain person who I feel that both of you will be very drawn to, whose outlook is very like unto your own, and we hope to form a real staff in the true sense of the word. Very small, mind you, but nevertheless an ideal combination of love and power and harmony. And you will see then that we shall very much headway in this development.
Mm-hmm.
In regard to the public work, which you are both anticipating, or at least shall we say we are anticipating for you, we have great hopes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great deal that you can do together. In fact, you were brought together for this work in a public sense, as well as a private one, that you might propagate truth, that you might be able to assist many people who are seeking and feeling their way in this movement, and particularly, one might say, those who have discovered it, at least those who are one aspect of it, they have been fortunate enough to have conviction from personal side, inasmuch as they've been in touch with their loved ones, but seek something more than that, seek spiritual upliftment, unfoldment of themselves, within themselves, and the powers within. You know, far too many people come into this truth and are content to, as it were, receive that evidence and then leave it at that, and do nothing about their own spiritual development and unfoldment. There are many, unfortunately, who drift, as it were, along quite lackadaisically and have no conception of the tremendous importance of the work that can and should be done from our side with our cooperation. There comes a time, I think, when most people realize that they must either go forward or stand still, or perhaps leave the subject alone altogether. You, fortunately, have gone forward desiring only enlightenment of the spiritual kind, not content with just the personal messages, which, important though they may be, seems to become a very consequence after time. We want to bring souls to you from our side, very highly evolved and enlightened, who can use you to speak to you, to give encouragement to many people, and to set them on the right path. This is what we hope to achieve and do, and I'm sure that we shall do a great deal in the coming months. Probably spiritualism, as I see it, is that people are only too content to go time after time to meetings to receive messages, often of no real importance at all. People are always seeking material advice. Material aspect is very strong in the majority of people. If only they could realize the true importance of this truth, not be content with just messages from relations, important though that may be, especially in the beginning. One must have proof, we know that. But there comes a time when surely people should realize there's much more to it than that. We come to break down the barriers in your world, to unite men and women throughout the world, to make people realize that they're brothers and sisters.
Then a question was asked about the different planes of order one may vibrate to.
Well, of course, that is one of our chief desires, that people should know more about our life and how that they themselves can become partakers of it while yet in a sense in the flesh. The point is that there are no limits, rather, and what can be set. Providing the individual that is on your side is aspiring enough within themselves. We've often been accused that we don't say very much of importance. Well, I would say that the reason for that is that the majority of people who attend meetings or attend development circles who are interested in this subject very seldom ever ask us anything of importance. They never, or very rarely, ever aspire to anything of importance. They seem to be quite content to bring us down to their level, but very, very rarely do you find anyone who wants to come up to us. And in consequence, those who from this side are anxious to do service and to help are, as it were, inhibited in doing the real work that they come to do, because the average person, as I've already said, is content to keep things on a material level. They are quite happy to talk to their relation or their friend who perhaps has not been able to build a bomb and in consequence, shall we say, is not terribly well versed in life over there, is not developed sufficiently to be able to give a very good account of themselves and their life. They're limited as to what they can say. But with those who are highly evolved on this side, who have been over here, as you term time, centuries, who have developed spiritually and gone through many planes of development, they're the persons who can help you and guide you and give you instruction. But it isn't easy, we admit that. To do that, of course, the individuals on earth have got to do something about themselves first. You just can't sit in a circle and develop and be a psychic or spiritual medium unless you yourself have made some attempt within yourself to develop your own self. That is, in other words, that you have spiritually aspired. So many people, I mean, there are great mediums in your world from the point of view of being wonderful psychics, but there are very few of those mediums. In fact, one could say you could count them on one hand who are really spiritually inclined, desirous of spiritual development within themselves, quite content with the psychic development, which is an entirely different thing. Where there are those who are gathered together for spiritual development and put that spiritual development into practice in your world and live it, and that's very important, then they are the people that we can reach and give out to his teachings of the spirit in the true sense. That's what we want to do.
Well,
but my dear child, of course, I think that's natural to everyone, common to everyone. Everyone who thinks deeply about themselves feels that they could do better or could do more. That's a good thing to feel like that.
For
one thing, it shows humbleness of spirit, which in itself is a good thing. There are so many people in your world who are not humble. I mean, I know instruments, and they're very fine psychics, but there's nothing humble about them. There's nothing spiritual about them. It just happened to contact a certain band of people who are, with no doubt at all, close to the earth, who are of an astral level, who are able to provide remarkable evidence of survival, which in itself is a wonderful thing. But when it comes to real spiritual development and teachings and to know more of the things that matter, they're very unreliable people to deal with. But I shouldn't be too disturbing your mind about yourself. The fact that you feel as you do feel is an excellent indication. After all, one can only strive within oneself to do the right thing, to do the thing that is best, not only necessarily for yourself, but for those around and about you. And sometimes, of course, even that supplies very big problems. Because if you do something, shall we say, that is essentially for the good of another, you yourself in consequence may suffer. And strangely enough, one can be in a kind of dilemma where in so doing good for another, not only can you suffer materially, but you can in a sense suffer spiritually. Now that may sound rather contradictory, but it is perfectly true, because there are certain problems that arise in the person's life of which one feels that one should do a certain thing, knowing full well that by doing that will be detrimental to yourself. But in the long run, being detrimental to oneself is much more inclined to the true progress. Of course, one has a duty to oneself, and one must always realize that. You are living in a material world, and you've got to live in a material existence. And to some extent, you have to have a kind of balance, and you have to sometimes reason with yourself to the effect that you have to do this, not because you particularly want to do it, but because you realize you've got to do it, and in consequence, something else which is important has to be, as it were, shelved or put to one side. This often happens with people who are implicit, shall we say, spiritual development in ontology. They sometimes have to sacrifice the better part of themselves. And at the time, one never quite knows what is the right thing to do. But time itself will prove that you may have had to have that, as it were, barrier placed before them so that you can eventually remove it. But in consequence, eventually, later on, the opportunity comes in a different way, in a different circumstance, for you to go ahead spiritually. There are many barriers that are often placed in the way, I won't say deliberately, but nevertheless they are there for people to overcome. There are obstacles that must be removed, and often the only person who can remove that obstacle or obstacles is the person themselves. I know certain things that have risen such recently, and it's caused a certain amount of, well, unhappiness, I suppose you would say, an uncertainty in one's mind, not quite sure as to the best approach of what to do. But believe me, that which is there will be removed eventually, in God's good time. The path will be clear for both of you to pursue that which you desire to do, which you have been brought together for this spiritual work, of great consequence. And all the barriers that may stand, and they do stand rather strongly at times, in front of you, are to be removed.
Thank you.
Are there any questions that you wish me to answer? Please do ask me.
Yes, we have got one, John, actually. We were only talking just before we came along about how do people stand? Are people on this side who have got big houses? They've had those houses handed down to them, and those houses have been obtained through perhaps wars and cruelty to other people. And yet they don't want those big houses, and other people have got no houses to live in. Now, how do those people fail and come on the other side?
Coming about is ancestors who have robbed the land from the people. Now, how do those people know in these sort of things that they've just all their money and wealth that they've had through the past history? Which robbed of things, and yet they are still living on those wealth that they've robbed. How do they feel when they get on that side of life?
Well, I think one could say, it may sound a strange answer, but one can say the more one has on earth, the greater the disappointment when they come here, inasmuch that if they have been used to magnificent houses, plenty of money, they've been lording it, as you put it, for a long time. It becomes a kind of obsession with them. It becomes part of their natural makeup. They have become what I suppose you could call spoilt. They are often invariably spiritually bankrupt when they come here. One could say the more possessions one has on earth, often the worse that person is in character through having so much materially. In other words, they become materialists. When we come here, they are often spiritually bankrupt. In other words, they have no large houses, no estates, they have no wealth, they have no certainties. The first time in their life, they are stripped of all these things, these outward things of show and pomp and ceremony, and they find that they are just as they really are, fundamentally, bereft of tremendous property, bereft of servants, of wealth. They then begin to realize, gradually, that it is not those things that were important, but themselves, the spiritual development or lack of development that they find in themselves. They are then perturbed. In other words, their punishment is something which is within themselves. No one punishes anyone on this side. There is no wrathful God who says that you must go to hell or you must do this or do that as a form of punishment. The point is, every soul, no matter who it is that leaves your world and comes to this, finds that they have created their own punishment within themselves. They have to work out their own salvation. They find that they have their own path to tread. No one can do it for them. If they have failed utterly, as so many do in your world, when they come here, they must undo the wrongs that they have done.
It's such a vast problem.
Until your world realizes fully the consequence of action done upon earth, until they realize the consequences that face them after death, I do not see any change, except in isolated instances, I cannot see any change in man. I personally feel that the people of the earth must work out their own salvation. We may come from our side and point the way where we have the opportunity to do so, but always it must fall back on the individual. Now you take the church. I know that we are often accused of attacking the church. At one time I was one of its pillars, you might say, in its earlier years. But I see the church today, and the church of several centuries ago, as it built up its power, and its land was stolen, and it was taken from the poor. I realize that the church is built not upon a rock, but on shifting sand. It is built on the misery of untold millions of souls that have long ceased to have life on earth, who exist over here, of course. The point is, the church has built a foundation upon degradation, upon fear. It built upon the wealth that should have been distributed among the poorer people who were the church's adherents, who were held down by fear. The church has built up an enormous, wealthy organization, which, in my opinion, is its greatest, or one of its greatest disgraces. To me, the Church of Christ is a mockery, as you have it upon earth. Christ, the simple man who was poor and downtrodden, who had nowhere to lay his head, who moved from place to place, preaching the gospel of peace and of love, he is so utterly unlike these who support the church, who are the pillars of the church. The church itself has so much wealth that if it were distributed, there would be no poverty in the world. Everyone could have a house, a reasonable abode in which to live in their standard. Everyone could have security to a degree. But no, the church, with its pomp and ceremony, with its enormous estates and its money, is, in my opinion, the exact opposite to the Master Jesus.
Yeah, it's also difficult to get that over the people, don't you? I
mean,
you're so frightened of hurting
their
feelings.
But my dear girl, I know that it is natural that no human being wishes to hurt another. We are the last to desire that. But eventually, it must be made clear to them. Truth must have its say, and truth must prevail until such time as the people realize the futility of creeds and dogmas, until they realize that to be a Christian is to be a way of life, not how much money you may have in the bank, not how many beautiful edifices you may have, no matter how beautiful they may be. They are a mockery to God.
I'll try to explain to people trusting them out of my belief in them and yours. You see, you come up against a brick wall, don't you?
I know, bricks and mortar, form and ceremony, yes. All these things, the paraphernalia, as it were, of the church, appeals to many people from an aesthetic, and one might almost say from a theatrical point of view. They cling to it chiefly through fear. They feel that by attending church and becoming one of its adherents, that they have a kind of safeguard, they have an assurance policy in our world.
I think it's so dreadful, a huge place like Coventry Cathedral has been built, and so many people out of homes, and all that money could have been utilized
to
building homes for people.
I know, it's an appalling thing, but there it is, clear and stark in your world, the might and the power of the church, and its wealth untold.
Why can't people see it? Why can't they reason it out?
I do not know. It seems to me that man sometimes does not reason. To me, I do not understand. I try desperately to understand how it is that people, sincere, ordinary people, do not see the futility of this church worship. I cannot call it worshiping of God. I call it church worship. I realize that many of the great cathedrals and churches are very beautiful. And from the aesthetic point of view, I have great admiration for them. But when I consider, as you do and others who think as we do, the tremendous poverty in your world, and I do not necessarily only mean poverty materially, I mean poverty spiritually. Yeah. And there is great spiritual poverty in the world. I mean, take just one organization, the Roman Catholic Church. The If you go to Italy or to Spain, any of these countries where they are so what we call Roman Catholic, you see such poverty that it really makes your heart ache to witness it. And yet those simple peasants earning a few pesetas per day, a few coins a day, will give willingly and freely to the church. Whereas it is the church that should be helping and supporting them, providing them with a livelihood, helping them out of their dire poverty. To me, it is self-pouring.
That is where that fear and superstition comes.
Well, it is that the church has built up over the centuries its hold upon the public by fear and superstition. Fear of the unknown, the fear that they may be condemned to go to hell for eternity. All these things that they have instilled in the minds over centuries of people. It's a very powerful weapon. The church holds its power, its foundation is built on fear, not love. If love were to sweep the world, you would have no justice. And yet they found their original, so they say, on the Prince of Peace. To me, the whole thing is so appalling. That's why we're so desperately against the church. Until we break down the power of the church, the spirit cannot be free. I state what I know is true. And if those who listen to my voice are honest with themselves, they will know deep down in the recesses of their heart that what we convey or say is truth. We are anxious that man should realize that the love of God is within each one, the power of God is there for each one to use to the glory of God, that each soul who is born is a part of the divine. We are all brothers and sisters, one with the divine. It seems to me that until the world realizes and breaks down the barriers that creeds and religions have set up, when nations can walk hand in hand in love and in peace, these things cannot be. We strive with all our might and main, our utmost we do, to convince you of survival. But that in itself is only the first step. We want people to become spiritually minded, to do the things of the spirit while yet in the flesh. As Jesus said, greater things than these shall you do, for I go unto my Father. And yet those who proclaim his teachings or consider that they do so do not do the things of the spirit. They do not do things anywhere near equal to Christ, let alone more so, as he said they should do. Why? The answer is simple. They live lives and preach a religion which is not as they think or say it is, based on the teachings of Jesus. They teach something which is fundamentally based on a hate and a fear, loving God. One who desires not that his children should become like unto him and one with him, but rather a wrathful, vengeful God, one who would send his son into the world to be crucified so that he could have the satisfaction of saving some and condemning others. That paganism is so appalling that when one thinks about it, one cannot think of words to say. All God's children find a path, and that path they can create and become one with those upon it. We have no hesitation in saying that the church has created havoc in the lives of untold millions. It has been the cause of untold numbers of souls who have died terrible deaths because they would not accept the narrow-mindedness of the church and its teachings and the power of the priests. Those powers are gradually, very slowly being broken. There are people here and there who perceive truth to some aspect, and in consequence are trying to overthrow the power of the church. We shall indeed rejoice in our world when the church's power is broken forever. For then people will think freely, they will be unshackled, they will be able to walk hand in hand with the divine, they will know the purpose of their lives, they will not be tied to creeds and dogmas, they will not, as it were, be fettered to things which are not true. They will see and perceive the things that are of God for the first time and become unto, like unto God. That is our desire, to break down these barriers. It is a great and wonderful mission, but it's a very hard and difficult one, and those who would walk with us will not find it easy. While the state is tied to the church, and the church can rule the state, and those who rule the countries of the world, it is a terrible thing.
Yes. I hope many people in the state
I hope so too.
Well, they do.
God does not want praise. He does not want people to go on to their knees to him. He wants them to live their lives spiritually and to do the things that are good and just and righteous while yet upon earth and in the flesh. He does not want form and ceremony. He does not want great edifices which in themselves mean nothing because they're shallow and built on shifting sands. He wants men to become like him, spiritually minded and aspiring, to do the work that he expects them to do. He is not concerned with wealth and pomp and ceremony. He is concerned with simple human beings that he has created, that they might indeed do his will and work upon the earth. Jesus and all the great prophets, every soul who's been into your world to show a path and a light on that path, each one has been humble in spirit, simple and trusting in God. But what do we find in the churches today? The exact opposite. Bishops, robes, incense, all the paraphernalia of man, not one single jot of the divine.
I often wonder how all that paraphernalia, you know, originated.
I could explain that, but it would take time. Man has such vanity in his soul.
Haven't these visions, when they arrive on the other shore side, how do they feel about these things?
Some, for a time, live in a world of their own illusion. Eventually, of course, they realize the futility of that life of theirs. Many are dismayed almost immediately upon stepping out of the body into this world to find that they were wrong, that they were preaching for so long things that were untrue. Many are full of remorse. Quite a lot return to earth to try to inspire where they can those who will listen or be of use to help humanity. It is very difficult. I would rather an atheist come here than often a bishop. At least the atheist has no strong preconceived ideas. His mind is free and open. But with a bishop, his mind is closed. It is narrow. It is like being in a prison cell where no light can enter in. How dare they say that God's will was and is a closed book, that it was only for a period of history, and from that time forth no revelation has come into the world. Jesus himself knew that there could be and would be greater prophets, greater teachers, greater seers, and yet they say there has been no revelation since biblical times. And all around you, every day, there is manifestation of the Spirit in some shape or form. There are those who have seen and those who have heard. There are those who cure the sick and heal the blind. No, their minds are closed. They are only concerned with their material conception of a God and of a religion, which they have founded over centuries of time in blindness and ignorance. We, thank God, are free. They are shackled. Shackled to their old, outworn creeds and dogmas and ideas. And they would hold you so if they could. I must go.
Oh, thank you.
The hour is waning. But come again, dear friends. We'll talk together. Peace be with you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.